I grew up in a rather large church. It was large with numbers of people and large in a large building, too. And so when I was a small child, my parents were concerned about how to meet up with me in this big church after Sunday school. And so we agreed on this designated door, and I would go stand by this particular door, and one of them would come and meet me, and we would go out to the car in this busy parking lot. And that worked quite well overall. But there was a Sunday when my brother and his family came to visit. Now, my brother is 20 years older than I, so he started his family before I was a year old. So they came and they visited us, and that meant that our family had to do something that we never, ever did back in those days, and that was to take two cars to church. So we had extra people, and so my mother drove one car with some of the people, and my father drove another car with some of the people. And you may know where this is going. So I went to my door, and I stood very dutifully waiting for them in this way that had worked so well so many Sundays, and nobody came. Nobody came, and nobody came, and people left, and they left, and they left, until in this large church, it was only one couple left, and they were the people who were designated to turn out the lights and close the doors. But I was standing by my door. And they figured out what had happened, and they called my parents, and they drove me home. And it all worked out. But I can't hear this story about Jesus without thinking about that time when my parents and I got separated and I was at the church. Now, there are, of course, many, many differences in these two stories. For one thing, in the story of that Rebecca read for us today, Jesus wasn't standing by the door waiting for his parents. He was happily hanging out with the teachers and the temple folks. He was having a grand old time. It was his parents who were looking for him, not he who was looking for them. But in both cases, there was these extra family, these extra groups of people, and so it's easy to understand how someone might not get collected when they thought somebody else was collecting them. Although it does still seem a little surprising that it took as long as it took for them to find him. See, we've been in Luke now for a couple of weeks. We're just in chapter 2 of Luke still, and already Mary in particular has experienced a lot of extraordinary spiritual things that relate to this special child of hers, Jesus. She's been visited by an angel. She has birthed this baby and had others who were visited by angels come and proclaim the specialness of this child, this Messiah. She has received prophecies about him from Elizabeth and Simeon and Anna. And so in some ways, it seems surprising that it took them 3 days to think that this Messiah that she had born would be at the temple. It seems surprising that she wouldn't have been laser focused on this child and where he was and making sure that he was safe and protected. But while it's only been a couple of weeks for us in reading these stories, it was 12 years for them since these things had happened. And although they were extraordinary spiritual experiences, even extraordinary spiritual experiences can be dulled over time with the drudgery of regular day-to-day experience. And that's a long time, 12 years. And so it seems Mary was going about her business with her family, not necessarily focused on who her child really was. She was seeing a little boy on a trip to Jerusalem. Now, besides the characters of Mary, who appears in most of these stories, and Joseph, and Jesus, there's another important character that Luke wants us to notice, I think. And that is the character of the temple. If you think about it, in these two chapters, a lot has happened at the temple. Now, we didn't read about the story of Zechariah, who's at the temple doing his priestly duties when he learns that he and his wife Elizabeth will bear a son, but that's there in Luke. And then we know that Mary and Joseph take Jesus to the temple for a couple of rituals. And that's where they meet Simeon and Anna. And here we are at the temple again, and before the second chapter of Luke is even finished. And Luke will identify some important things about this temple in Jerusalem throughout the book. And I think what Luke wants us to understand is the centrality of the temple and of religious life to this little family. They, in fact, were a pious family. In fact, it wasn't even required that everybody would come to the temple for these occasions, for this Passover. It was only men who lived within about 20 miles who were required to come. And yet we are told that the whole family came every year. And so there is this sense that this was a meaningful part of family life. They took in as much as they could. Now, of course, for us, the closest thing we have to a temple is our church here. And it is the place we come to enact our rituals, our religious rituals, our rites of passage. It is a place we come to nurture our faith. It is a place we come to claim our identity in Christ. And so, like Jesus in the temple, we come to this place to learn and to grow in faith. And I think this story invites us to ask how we do that within our own religious community. If, in fact, the temple was the place that Jesus came to be nurtured and to grow, then we, too, should look at how we nurture and grow one another in this space. And I might just add that it is easy for us, in reading so many stories throughout Jesus' life about the temple, to get a different impression of it. I mean, we get all these biases about Pharisees and Sadducees and scribes. We remember the story where Jesus overturned the tables in the temple later in his ministry. But we forget that Jesus was very much at home in this space. This was his family, his people. And yes, he challenged and instructed and discipled many of his people, some of whom embraced that, some of whom opposed it. But these were his people. This was his home, nonetheless, in a sense. And so we look at how we, too, can be at home in this space, how, too, we can nurture. And so I wonder, have you been nurtured, mentored, encouraged, spiritually stimulated here? And I also wonder, have you been the one to nurture, mentor, encourage and spiritually stimulate others here? We read in this passage, in verse 46, after 3 days they found him in the temple, sitting among the teachers, listening to them and asking them questions. Now that verse has two actions that Jesus did. He was listening and he was asking questions. Churches have traditionally been pretty good about asking people to listen. I mean, they provide teachers, they provide sermons that we hope people will listen to. But are churches always as good at welcoming questions? Some churches become very uncomfortable with those who question. A certain version of Christianity finds questions a little bit, well, questionable, because they might imply doubt. And for that version of Christianity, doubt is something not to be acknowledged. Doubt could mean that you don't have faith, and if you don't have faith, that is something to be hidden, not to be admitted. But as one writer puts it, at the bottom of great doubt lies great awakening. If you doubt fully, you will awaken fully. I am happy that in this church, it is my experience, and in this Anabaptist tradition, it is my experience that questions are not only welcome but encouraged. I've been invited to show up at Venture Club and Youth Sunday School for Ask a Pastor Sunday. Children and youth are invited to write down questions and then to raise them with pastors or their other teachers regularly here. Because questions don't even just assume doubt, although doubt is welcome. They also assume curiosity. And curiosity opens the way to great spiritual opportunity and challenge. Curiosity is an important part of life, and I assure you that here in this church, questions are welcome. That any of the pastors are happy to hear questions that invite, that admit doubt or curiosity. But there's another good reason to welcome questions as well, and that is that questions and listening, these two things that are pointed out from Jesus, questions and listening both help us learn. In 2022, researcher Elizabeth Bonowitz did a study. She took two groups of children, and in one group, she presented to both groups certain material, certain learnings, teachings. And in one group, she told the children to listen carefully. That was their job, to listen carefully. And in the other group, she told the children that they should each ask questions. And so these two different elements were encouraged. Now, both groups learned. The group that asked questions learned a little bit more than the other group that just listened. But the bigger difference, actually, was that given a chance to learn more, the group that got to ask questions placed a much higher interest in continuing to learn. They, in other words, showed that they valued that learning and that subject matter and wanted more learning. And so I think we need to think about faith in just this way. We learn our faith through listening and through learning, through asking questions. As Richard mentioned, today is the day that we talk about here as Epiphany. It is an Epiphany Sunday. And Epiphany, in common language, means a realization, a discovery, a revelation about the essential nature of something. That day in the temple, I think Mary had an epiphany about Jesus. You see, she starts by scolding Jesus when she finds him, accusing him of saying, "How could you do this to us?" But by the end of the passage, just a few verses later, we find that Mary treasured all these things. It's this pondering Mary that we have heard about throughout Luke, who notices, reflects, and holds dear these moments. It was said that she treasured these moments, going from something that challenged her, something that in fact was uncomfortable, that she didn't really like, to something that she treasured. One of the reasons I'm a big fan of church is because so often it is here that I too receive an epiphany about Jesus. I come here to teach and to learn. I come here to offer and receive, and so often among my people here, I too come to a deeper realization about Jesus through the lives and the actions, the words and the encouragement, the stories and the mentoring that I experience here. When you heard this story today, this passage, I wonder who it was that you identified with. Was it the parents frantically searching for their child and frustrated because he wasn't where they expected him to be? Or was it Jesus sitting at the feet of the scribes and the teachers in the temple? Or was it the teachers themselves sitting with Jesus, interacting, teaching and learning with him? I suspect all of us could identify with all three of these sets of characters at the church. Perhaps to read this story through, first as the parent, then as the child, and then as those in the temple. Because we are all three at different points, offering and receiving epiphanies, coming to this place where nurturing can happen, growing faith, questioning, and listening to one another.